Welcome to the History Slam podcast from ActiveHistory.ca. Here is your host, Sean Graham.
Thank you, Adam. Welcome to the History Slam, everybody. I am Sean Graham coming at you today nearly live. I'm in Ottawa, Ontario. And a few months ago, we were down in New Hampshire, and we did a podcast on the American perspective of the War of 1812. And today we thought it'd be a good idea to take another look at the War of 1812, but take a look from a more local perspective, as there's a group in Oshawa who's just launched a new website about the War of 1812 in Oshawa. So joining us from the Foundation for Building Sustainable Communities, who's responsible for this website, we have Glenn McKnight. Welcome to the podcast, Glenn. Thanks for doing this.
Great. Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Now, we're doing this over Skype. And this is our second try at doing this because the first time I screwed it up. So we're trying again. It seems as though everything's working this time, and hopefully that stays true. So Glenn, just in general, what is your group? What is the Foundation for Building Sustainable Communities? What do you guys do?
Well, we're a not-for-profit based in Oshawa, and we do a number of community-based projects. And one of our mandates is to find and share local history. And we've had a strong interest in military history, local individuals who have a story to tell. And one of our projects is called Oshawa Remembers, where we recorded short little audio recordings of veterans who served in the Second World War and the Korean War. And those stories are on our website, and we share them. They're all open source. They're on Internet Archives as well. And the idea is to have them short and sweet, and students could use them to actually realize that the people who fought in these wars weren't some distant people. They were similar ages to themselves, and they had little, many times, mundane little stories to tell. So our foundation is trying to open the eyes of local community members, realizing that we actually have a history.
Right. And what's interesting about it, too, is that we've talked about this, is some of the different ways in which you do this. You guys are using some innovative technologies in trying to tell these stories.
When we first started off, we, like yourself, we were doing a podcast. And we were involved in PodCamp and different technologies, using a lot of WordPress as some of the social blogging tools. But we started going into more video, and again, short video rather than just an elongated video format, similar to the Memories Project in the United States or even ours in Canada. So we said, well, how can we push this content out? And we understood that young people in particular are using smartphones more, whether they're iPhone or Android platform. So we started making mobile applications, and more importantly is pushing short video content, and that would use something called augmented reality. So we integrate our augmented reality short videos, which after scanning a poster or an image, a short video gets pushed to their smartphone. Also, we produced a comic book on the Korean War, and throughout the comic book is these short little symbols called Layer, and that's one of the augmented reality software programs. So you can imagine a young teenager reading a little comic book about the Korean War, and then they could scan in one of the panels, and they get a short little video clip pushed to them. And it could be an archive piece from CBC or somewhere else, but it really makes reading the comic book a lot more interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And to be able to do that as a not-for-profit group and to incorporate all these new things, I mean, that's a pretty cool way to get young people involved, or frankly, to get anybody involved in history and new ways to tell these stories. I'm assuming that the reaction to that has been pretty much universally positive.
Well, we had a dinner. In fact, I believe Bob Bell's going to join us as well on this call, and he could talk about our dinner that we did with the local Simcoe United Church. So our team of members that we've incorporated into our dinner was a group of local Durham College graduates in film and animation, and they actually were quite thrilled of having the opportunity to do and work on these videos. So we did one of our first videos on the weekend and demonstrated using the cell phone. Now, I'm not sure if everybody got it that understood it, but, you know, we're not out to convert everyone to use their smartphone to get their content. People will get it on local television as well. So our video content will be pushed with local community TV as well. But we're just saying that we're interested in using many roads to Rome approach to disseminating our information.
Right. And you guys also use geocaching a little bit as well, right? And Well, first, before we get into sort of the actual thing, for those people who don't know, because I didn't know this for a long time, and my uncle started to do it, and he sort of explained it. Exactly, like, what is geocaching?
Normal geocaching is using either a dedicated device that's a GPS, or you can purchase a software program for your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android, and it allows you to navigate to a hidden cache. It's like, you know, if you were a Boy Scout or something, you would, part of the orienteering is to orientate with a compass to a particular location, usually a hidden item, a flag or something. And it teaches some basic skill sets that, right. that also geography students do this sort of thing as well. Mm. What we're doing is in our mix is we're trying to blend geocaching with historical sites. So we have five historical geocaches, which we've created an iPad app for as well. And so these five locations are quite large. They're, if you've ever gone to Costco's and you've had to buy one of those huge gallon containers of mustard or whatever, I don't know why people use it, but they do. So I have some of those containers, and in it is buttons and pins and brochures for local museums, and then the story about that location.
Which is, yeah, so that's a really cool idea, and because not only do you, is that another way that you can tell the story and give and provide these sort of items to people, but it also gets them out in the community and seeing some different locations where the things happened.
And every day people go to it, Sean. Every day, you know, what happens, they write in the book that they were at the location. There's a log book. But they go online to geocaching.com and log in that they've been to the location. So every day somebody's taking a brochure or a Heritage Canada pin or reading the story of the what we put there. So we in this series, 9.2 kilometers from one site to all five of them. And it starts with the buried treasure story that we have near Camp X. It goes to one of the first individuals who was a guard at Queenston Heights. He was at 15 years old. That's Thomas Henry. Then the attack on the Oshawa Harbor by an American ship, and we have the cannonball and grape shot. Then the American prisoner of war location in Oshawa. These were prisoners from Fort Detroit that General Hall surrendered to Isaac Brock. Then up to one of the taverns that was created to service the circuit riders, the soldiers as they went from Kingston to York and beyond. So we have these five local historical areas, and it raises the awareness that there was actually a history here. And when I mention stuff like the POW camp, the automatic thing people say is, oh yeah, that was a German POW camp, but it was in Bowmanville. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was one. That's great that you knew. But this was the American prisoners of war. They were marched all the way from Detroit en route, and they're absolutely blown away when they find out that it's local history.
With that, we have a new guest. Just we're breaking new ground here on the podcast. Not only are we doing it over Skype for the first time, but we're bringing in another guest right in the middle. So we're thrilled to have Bob Bell, also from the Foundation for Building Sustainable Communities. Bob, welcome into the podcast.
Glad to have be here.
Terrific. So Glenn and I were just talking about some of the different ways that you guys were using technology and incorporating history. So now I'm just wondering, you know, who is your target audience for this? Is it just people in Oshawa? Are we looking for the wider community? And within that, is there a specific group of people in terms of maybe age that you're looking to get interested in local history through your projects?
As for the geographics, I think this interview proves, you know, that everybody can worldwide now. It's not local anymore. Yeah, everybody can go onto the internet. A lot of what we do is e-friendly. It's up on the web, Creative Commons that anybody can use. Our target audience is everybody, especially, though, I would say the young and the disconnected. Mm. This is a new way of drawing them in.
Right, and that sort of speaks to the use of the technology then, and reaching people on their own platforms and making sure that, you know, they don't the effort really is on your part to get the material to them, and you don't want them to have to put too much effort into finding your own stuff, it seems, because if they do that, or if you force them to work, you know, hard, maybe they won't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And our material isn't a 1,000-page book that they've got to wade through. We keep our message short in bite-sized pieces that it's accessible. Yeah, we try to draw them in, get them interested in history. If that gets them and our other causes, and if that gets them interested, then hopefully they will then pursue deeper research.
Right. And Bob, too, Glenn was talking about the dinner that you guys had last weekend and how that was a pretty big success.
Yes, and I was surprised. There was actually some young people there as well. It was mainly older, but you never know what you pull out. I don't know if Glenn mentioned the one guy that came up to us and said, I have Sir Isaac Brock's personal walking stick. Would you be interested in taking a picture of it?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
How did he get that?
So, but you know what? I think that demonstrates every time we speak to different groups, somebody comes up and has a story. They have an object, a story. Now we're helping them share this story, and they're offering whether to, you know, the story, how did they get the stick, you know, have a photograph of it. And there's such an awareness of General Brock's contribution that to have the opportunity to, for someone at just a local church dinner, come up with an object. If we didn't do this event, the commemoration of 200 years of peace, somebody wouldn't have come up with that stick. It would have been a hidden gem in our community, and it was a big surprise to me.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things. We're not just going to the archives in terms of a university. We're going to people's basement and attic archives. Right. We're getting them involved, and they're saying, hey, looky what I've got.
Yeah, and yeah, that definitely gets people engaged. And like you say, everyone does have some sort of connection to these stories.
And we're speaking to different groups, Rotary, Probus, Oshawa Library, Historical Society, Heritage Oshawa. And some of those individuals have a natural interest. But, you know, we're always encountering people who are quite surprised on hearing the information. They're not aware. And you know what? This is. I know the government has been getting a lot of criticism over the money spent to promote this event. But you know, it's such a significant piece of our history, and we are so fortunate to have this opportunity to share this history. And we're interested in going further with other historical understated stories as well. Mm-hmm. One of the stories we did a couple of years ago was 125th anniversary of a particular building, and it's called the Columbus Community Center. In our search, we found a Captain Prentice, and he served as a captain in the Fenian Wars, and he was wounded and died. And fascinating pictures one found of a ragtag militia that off they went from our location and to defend the country, and he ended up getting wounded and dies. But our local history from a military point of view has been a strong one. And one of the things we try to share with people is that, you know, Oshawa was not a center point of the conflict, but the people who served came back and provided leadership skill sets that they wouldn't have gotten if they weren't in military service for a year or two. They came back with a lot of skill sets that benefited the community.
Well, another group we spoke to was the youth in policing. And one of our precious moments there was when we mentioned the buried treasure in Oshawa. And you saw a couple eyes all of a sudden light up. Buried treasure here? And we hit the magic button for those people. And those people will no doubt be doing their research, trying to find our 100,000 in silver.
Yeah, well, hey, I would be too. Come on. Jeez.
Yeah. But that's, you know, it's just one little aspect that I'm sure those people will now remember because that was what was important to them at this time.
Right.
Hopefully they get interested, maybe develop further. But that was by hitting many aspects. You try to hit the button that hits each particular person.
Right. And so really what you're doing is you're providing a new context for bigger events that have happened and providing this local perspective and give people a new appreciation for really what happened.
Yes. Yeah, well, because all history, when it comes down to it, it's local, right? Yeah. Everything happens in a location.
That's why the geocaching is important, because it's a physical location. Even if that building, that POW camp, is no longer there, our hidden cache is you can physically stand in the location where it was. You can read the story. There's pictures in the cache, and you can scan the image and get a short video on we do a dramatized story about that location. So even the ghosts are there. You know, we can't show you that building. We can't show you the Americans attacking our harbor, but we can do the best possible way of trying to give you almost like tasters of history. Hopefully something will spark an interest and an appreciation. History is a social and cultural through the community. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people hoard it. Because they get too obsessed with dates and they downplay the local role, as Bob said. What we want to say is that, yes, it may be small in comparison, but, you know, the War of 1812 impacted everybody. Some mm-hmm. people benefited, some people suffered, but, you know, food prices went up a lot. Food was stolen from local farmers by our own militia. You know, like, it did have impacts. And we're looking at the mundane stories as well as the grand stories.
So in general, so you mentioned the War of 1812 and the food prices is one example, but is there an easy way to sort of sum up Oshawa's role? Like, did Oshawa have one particular role in the war, or was it sort of just one community that was engaged and affected by, you know, the various aspects of this conflict?
I would say it's emblematic of the smaller communities that actually provided militiamen from ages of 15 to 63. They were tapping into the logistics, whether it's water or cord roads. I don't think there's one story that stands out, but I think it has hundreds of little anecdotal stories that are classic of other locations throughout the lines where the battles were happening. And that's the stuff that gets forgotten. I think we have a preoccupation like we have on, say, Laura Secord. Oh, here's a heroine. But there's Mary Henry as an example who was even more of a heroine. But we tend to get preoccupied with only certain things. And we're saying you may have a community that has stories as well. Take the time, look at how we're approaching it, and it may inspire you as well.
Yeah, and I would say, like, if you want to look at it, like, we weren't a city like York or town or anything. We were sort of the hinterland. We were a passing through place. We were a way station, handy place to keep prisoners of war because you're not right next door to major developments. But we did have the tavern where they stopped. We were a source of labor. So I think we did have a part. But it was, as Glenn says, typical of a smaller community. I often think of how people in Oshawa would have got the news of York exploding. They actually heard it. And then seeing soldiers retreat through and sort of sitting there and saying, uh-oh, like, we can't retreat. We're here.
Yeah, which is really interesting when, like, that particular part of it, like, that you're close enough to York that you really can hear and see some of the events, but you're far enough removed that you're not really considered part of the epicenter of it all.
Yeah, well, on that story, Sean, a number of citizens hitched up their ox carts, hitched up cannon, and they all rushed in to defend York. And as soon as they got there, they were imprisoned by the Americans, which, you know, every story has a good and bad point. What's interesting is when the Americans left, they couldn't carry everything that they stole. And they opened up the storehouses and said to the local Canadians saying, oh, help yourself. And they, you know, help themselves, because this stuff was not, was supposed to be distributed to the local farmers. And it's interesting, they helped themselves. And there was a decree after saying, hey, everybody, this was the British, bring back all that stuff that was given to you. And they didn't get much stuff brought back. They basically,
surprising.
They said, well, we were given the stuff.
I like that story. That's good. So the other thing we've talked about before is the native contribution and native communities around Oshawa and how you guys have had some difficulty, and not just you, but just sort of, you know, anyone who tries to study the groups who are around Oshawa and trying to really pin down that their contribution from that local aspect.
We've gone to the local groups, Métis groups, different groups constantly. We ask, and people have anecdotal stories, but we have not located any individual who has a story that can say, yes, my great 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 grandfather was involved, or what. So there, it's one of those. I'm absolutely sure they were involved. But we do not have that source because, again, history is written by the victors, right? So yeah. They were the unfortunate losers of the war, especially in the Midwest. They, unfortunately, we all know that if it wasn't for our native compatriots, that the war would have went a different way. But unfortunately, we don't have any local story. And hopefully in the next 2 years, we keep asking and asking and asking. Somebody will come forward with something, letters or information. It is a missing piece, and it's a sad missing piece.
I think it is a very large missing piece because Oshawa Harbor is where the natives came in and then took what is now Simcoe Street, basically, up to what is now Lake Scugog and on beyond. Like it was a major thoroughfare back through history. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty obvious that there is sketches of native camp down by the lake. There's anecdotal stories of a native cemetery down there, but that's all it is. It's my grandfather told me that his grandmother is buried there, and there's no proof. Mm. You know there had to be a big contribution, but it just doesn't exist.
Right.
We did have a native come to our launch with Colin Carey and that. Stood there. It was very typical. He was involved, but when the speeches were going on, he stood at the back and listened.
Okay.
And he wasn't making a big show. He was there. And I think maybe that's what's happened, is they have sort of stepped in the background, and unfortunately the stories haven't been passed on.
Right, yeah. And I know, like, at the War Museum, they have their War of 1812 temporary exhibit going on right now, and They present it as though there's the War of 1812 was four war. They present it from four perspectives. The American perspective, British perspective, Canadian perspective, and the Native perspective. And looking through that exhibit, it seems as though that was sort of part of the problem that they came up with too, is that a lot of those stories hadn't been preserved, and a lot of that information was coming from the Canadian or the Americans or the British, and they were using the information that those people had about the Native contribution, and that's where they were getting a lot of that information. And at the same time, they also presented as the British, the Americans, and the Canadians can all claim victory, or at least the outcome and what happened at, you know, from 1815 on was good for those three groups of people, whereas the Natives were really the only clear losers in the war, despite the fact that their contribution might have been the most useful or the most prominent.
Very much so. I agree 100%. And, you know, I think as Glenn has said, the war allowed the Americans to expand west, and they became a defeated people, unfortunately.
So as you guys are telling these stories and doing these events locally in Oshawa, what has the response of people in Oshawa been? Do you find them getting a new appreciation for their town, or are they just, you know, finding this, you know, just somewhat interesting and engaging the story, or is it a real, or are people really re-engaging in local history through these projects, you think?
I can go back to the 200 people we had at our dinner on Saturday night, and Bob and I were dressed in costume. We took on characters of local people, and we stayed in character. We tried to stay in character through the whole evening.
Yeah.
And we had a display, and we never had so much interest. And it's taking a little while to drum up the interest, but when they hear the local stories to go with it, that really makes their eyes light up.
Right.
Because it makes it relevant. You know, people come out and they say, yeah, my descendants are Empire loyalists as well. You know, maybe not from Oshawa, but they're getting a connection that this guy was 15 years old that served as a guard, or this individual, even though he was a Quaker and he didn't drink alcohol, he had no problem selling it. You know, this person got a pension. He was 81 years old when he finally got his pension, and it was only $20. And it's the little stories. Everybody can relate to these small stories that tie communities together. So I would say we're getting more and more calls from different groups. The core group that we need to get out to, and it's going to be quite busy, is grade 10 history students. It's a compulsory subject in Ontario. And everything we're doing, whether it's oral stories of the Second World War and Korean War, or the comic book, or using various different technologies, we'll adapt our approach depending on who the group is. We don't dwell on smartphone technologies to a retired group that right. we're, but we will do that for the grade 10 history students. So we'll adapt, and we try to make it fun. We try to make it interactive. To answer your question, yeah, I think it's starting to really build.
And then to that end, I guess, is it easier to get people involved given that it's local and that people can, you can say to people, or people themselves can say, you know what, like this place where I drive past every day that I just thought was another place is actually a source of historical importance and something cool really happened here. I mean, is that a good way to open with people and really capture their attention?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and it was interesting. One of the natives I was talking to, I had a question. The name of Oshawa has always been a question of where it came from. The accepted story is that a bunch of white men were sitting around trying to come up with a name, and an Indian happened to be walking through and said, call it Oshawa. And it was an Indian word. Well, I noticed Tecumseh's second command. His name is spelled very much like Oshawa. So I asked the local native about it. Now, it was interesting. Bingo. I had his attention there. I was addressing it on his terms. Right. Now, it appears that theory is wrong. but it was a fun story nonetheless. It's something that showed it was a hot button for him. The smartphone, hot button for the students. And even one of the people that was at the dinner, I tagged a picture of him on Facebook, and I made reference to the fact that his family has been associated with our church for many, many generations, almost going back to the beginning. Like, there's a major road in Oshawa called Ritson Road. He's a descendant. And I think it was just after the War of 1812, but he traces his family all the way back, and he has an interest due to that.
But I guess then the one danger that's a possibility is that perhaps people would find that what you're doing is maybe just anecdotal as opposed to, you know, really getting into the core issues. And do you find that that's a legitimate fear?
It's something you have to be careful of. But, for example, at the display, I had a pile of my own books there. And another local historian happened to walk by, and she was looking at my book, because she's actually written some books. And there was a couple books there that she picked up, and she said, where did you get this? And so I said, well, here's where you go. And there was one by Leslie Frost, former premier. And it's got some maps that don't appear anywhere else. So there's a way of tying the stories got her interest in the dinner. She came there, and where did we send her? Back to the sources.
I think some people want the 30-second bit of history, like I guess the Dominion Institute or Historica did those little commercials on TV.
Yeah.
You know, great stuff. It's some of it's sensational, and you know, but it's Hollywoodish. I can see it has its place. We obviously don't have a budget for that sort of stuff, but we're trying to tap into the resources in the community, including our animation and film students who volunteered in our project. And they're going to create a series of 10 videos, which we'll push out to local TV, that could be stringed together as a 30-minute show. But our idea, again, is 2 to 3 minute shows that they could pop it in as fillers throughout the day. Are they going to be anecdotal? Probably, but we want to encourage people to go and get the deeper. Now that we've got your interest, now we got you.
Yeah.
we're looking at the little history as gateway drugs.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to put it. I've never heard someone put it that way. I like that.
So you know, but you know, when we dress up and we have our genuine muskets and we have our genuine cannonballs from the location, and we can't get out of the room. there seems right. to be a genuine appetite there. We mined into a zeitgeist that says, hey, yeah, you know, and people come up and say, well, I got a cookbook from the Second World War. Would you be interested? Of course we would be. We're interested in everything that, you know, some of the stuff can be pretty mundane stuff. You know, that's good. You know, it's not all firecrackers and you know, war and destruction. A lot of the period is affected people on a regular day-to-day level. Yeah, it could be a little boring, but I find it fascinating. On the weekend, we had a we had 20 models for our fashion show. It was phenomenal. We had Regency dancers. We had a group of Regency dancers. The people were, their eyes were glued to the dancers and the fashion show. Nobody left. It was a phenomenal opportunity. I tried to sneak in a little bit of history, you know, try to give the overview and all, but we were not there to really push it. We were saying, putting food, music, dance into the era of the Regency period and a little bit of culture. And by the way, there's a display here and talk to us on any level. And we used a gentle approach. We didn't push it down their throat.
Yeah, and there was an atmosphere there. One of the videos I took, my autofocus wasn't working on my camera, and I was looking at it, and it was amazing. It almost made it better because you could see the atmosphere. Mm. You could hear the people in the audience clapping along with the dancers. It was actually phenomenal. It was like an old barn dance. And when the people from Imperial Arts were doing the presentation on videos, I was watching, and it wasn't just the young people that were watching. The older people were watching these videos, and it was projected on the wall, not the biggest screen. And so everybody, you could see people craning, and it was fascinating. And I think the university and college students were really impressed that the people were engaging with them in their production there.
Right.
And by the way, when Bob approached his church about the War of 1812, they have a normal dinner, and we are doing this as a fundraiser. It was
a fundraiser for the church, not for ourselves.
Yeah, so we didn't make any money on this, but we approached them, and you know what they said, you know, but so we said, well, we're going to impress you. We're going to bring all these elements, food, dance, music, fashion, all together under one roof. And it was almost 4 hours long, and people had a great time, and we have to think about next year. It was our first kick at the can at doing something like this, and we had our local MP as a representative of the Queen, and we started the event with a little bit of history, and then it was interrupted. We had two actors dressed as Kentucky militia, and they've been wandering the hills for 200 years in our area. They were dressed up in period costume, but they had great makeup, looking like they're zombies almost, right? They were all rather pale. And they came in with cap guns, musket cap guns, and firing it off and interrupting the start of the dinner. And they tried to capture the Queen's representative. So
I hope you told the MP that that was going to happen. Otherwise, I could see some security issues going down there.
No, it was actually a laugh. Yeah. At one point, the Kentucky militiamen yelled out, "Where's your leader?" And we all pointed at Dr. Carey.
They're all going to grab him. So yeah, so it ended up, you know, we basically used that as an opportunity because they said, "We heard there's some buried treasure here." And so Bob had a chance to say, well, it was actually true. And so, you know, we blended in with a little drama, one of the local stories, and start, you know, we got the juices going, I think. And I think it was a good way to start it all off. And it just went from there. And we had a silent auction, and we raised $1,600 in the silent auction, which wasn't bad. So the whole event was quite successful.
Yeah, which is great. So, you know, it really seems as though, you know, you guys have been pretty successful in engaging people in these local stories and connecting the larger stories or these wider national stories at the local level. And that's, as you say, a gateway for people to get involved and get engaged.
And our slideshow's available through slideshare.net. It's accessible through our website. And we're doing talks with the various different historical societies local. Remember, we started in Oshawa, but people in our neighboring communities are not involved with it. So we're welcoming, you know, if people have stories in our neighboring communities, Bowmanville, Curtis, Whitby, Ajax, anything in the whole area, we're happy to present with them and partner with them. We've partnered with the Pickering Museum to do a lot of our film shoots on location. And again, all our stuff, we're saying, here's the content. It's all open sourced. We'll give it to you if you can use it for your own content, for your own website. So it has a legacy beyond just us. Mm-hmm. Problem with a lot of community television, they'll show stuff and they're obligated under CRTC rules, but that doesn't mean it stays. It becomes their property. And after they play it a certain length of time, it's destroyed. So it's not like they give it to internetarchives.org. There has a legacy? No. And it's theirs. In our case, we're owning it all. So we're keeping the Creative Commons license, attribute license. But that means we push it out there. So if you want to use it, you're welcome. But you must acknowledge it's the source. But we don't want any money for it.
And that's another point, too, about the local community, distant communities. Somebody I know lives in Toronto. Saw us doing this. He showed up to my flea market booth and brought me a Lundy's Lane cannonball and an American sword. Not that we're collecting the stuff, but he wanted it to be recorded. So I took a photograph of it. Yeah. So we've added that to the record.
Yeah, which is terrific. And the fact that, yeah, the people are volunteering to come to you guys with their stories or their material, I think, really is a marker of the success that you've had building this foundation within the community and becoming a well-known entity, and that people are being engaged and are getting involved and are taking an interest in the community's past because they want to volunteer and they want to be a part of this.
Yeah, we're trying to use many different roads to Rome approach, and we're not going to convince everybody. You know, the people who are interested are genuinely interested, but we are reaching out at their own levels. And to go back to your anecdotal thing, I think there's value in sometimes being, you know, a little flippant, but hopefully that will go to a more deep understanding and appreciation, because we're willing to go as far, and we admit that we don't know some things. You know, we're direct. We don't have the native stories. We don't know how many prisoners. There's a lot of things we don't know, and we state it emphatically.
So the new website is 1812waroshawa.com. We'll link it up on the website on Active History, along with some of your other material, and all the contact information is there. And as Glenn and Bob say, they're open. If you have stories, you want to get involved, you're free to contact them. You guys always love getting new material and hearing from people. So if anyone out there has anything, be sure to get in touch. So that is Glenn McKnight and Bob Bell from the Foundation for Building Sustainable Communities in Oshawa, Ontario. Thanks for doing this, guys.
Oh, thank you for the
opportunity. Thank you.
And with that, we are going to make a quick transition over to our Prime Minister's Fantasy Draft recap. We've reassembled the entire team here in Ottawa and from France. Pat Fournier is in France. Pat, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for doing this. You know, I joked around with you guys before that the Prime Minister's Fantasy Draft had a huge draw because we recorded in Ottawa and none of you guys lived in Ottawa. But I never for once thought that, you know, we'd get you on from France.
Hey, that's the beauty of technology.
Yeah, so I'm assuming right now you're sitting in front of the Eiffel Tower drinking wine with a beret on?
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Terrific.
With a jacket because it's a little cold, but that's exactly what I'm doing.
Dynamite. And also here, the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Boyce is back. This is the third straight episode in which you are making an appearance, by the way.
I'm trying to set a record.
Well, that is the record.
Well, that can't be broken.
Oh, okay. All right, I gotcha. And coming back, Mike Thompson, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Again, I think it should be pointed out, you said you've reassembled the team of selectors, not the teams themselves. We have not reanimated prime ministers and assembled them in this room with us.
Although that would be pretty amazing.
That would be pretty awesome.
It would be quite the achievement. So a couple weeks ago, we did the Prime Minister's Fantasy Draft. We posted it. We've received some feedback. We're going to talk about the feedback we got a little bit. And we also are going to announce our winner. But before we do that, let me just go over the teams again. I selected, with my team, William Lyon Mackenzie King, Lester Pearson, R.B. Bennett, and John Abbott. Aaron Boyce selected Pierre Trudeau, Sir John A. Macdonald, Alexander Mackenzie, and John Diefenbaker.
Mike selected Wilfrid Laurier, Brian Mulroney, Robert Borden, John Thompson. The undrafted team was Mackenzie Battle, Charles Tupper, Arthur Megan, John Turner, Kim Campbell, and Paul Martin. And your champions, Pat Fournier's team of Jean Chrétien, Louis St. Laurent, Stephen Harper, and Joe Clark. Congratulations, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
How does it feel?
Winning is in my genes.
So the final vote totals, we got eight, as of this recording, we have 864 votes. The final totals were 612 for Pat, 134 for Mike, 56 for Aaron, 47 for myself, and the undrafted team got 15, which makes me very happy that they didn't get shut out. And I didn't vote, I didn't make any of those votes for the undrafted team, which I threatened to do if they had gotten zero, but 15 votes went their way. We'll qualify this, that the reason it's this skewed is that the blog was, the poll was posted on a conservative blog, and they put it up with the headline of, you know, let's stick it to Trudeau, I believe was the headline of that post. And so they put it up, and the person on the blog highlighted Stephen Harper's name. And so clearly there was an intent to, one, make Stephen Harper's team win, and two, make Trudeau's team lose. And they were successful in Harper's team winning, unsuccessful in Trudeau's team losing, because I still lost.
And you can see why I'm such a genius for just choosing Harper for that exact reason, because I knew something like that would happen.
And in retrospect, what I think I should have done, or we should have done, is not included at all Harper and Martin, and said, you know, it's the first 20 prime ministers, and then all five teams would have four people each, and then we sort of get out of the contemporary politics sort of thing. And because we said on the podcast as well that categorizing Harper was really difficult because he's still the prime minister, and it's hard to get a sense of his historical legacy.
Right. But so, at the same time, the people, the Stephen Harper supporters would have complained for not including that. So we would have had just a different problem, I think.
Yeah, but, you know, if we explained it well enough and reasonably enough, maybe it would
be. But it's historical based, and it's still.
Those supporters who massively voted for my team were very reasonable.
Well, some of them were.
I'm sure. Guess.
So that accounts for the skew in the voting. But we also did get some pretty fun feedback, I thought, both. Some positive, some negative, but most of it made me laugh. So how about you guys? We'll go around. What did you, first Aaron, what sort of feedback have you gotten in the past couple of weeks?
Well, it's really interesting. A lot of people who I send it out to a lot of friends and family. And the thing that I found most interesting, first of all, with family, they all admitted that they did vote for me, but they all disagreed with me in one way or another. Mm-hmm. Most of my family said, yeah, it looks like a great team, but I disagree with this prime minister or this prime minister. And friends did the same thing, which was wonderful. I think that was the exact idea, to try to see where other people leaned. And in fact, I got one comment saying that I disagreed with your one person, but I thoroughly agreed with another one, hence I had to vote for you. So again, mix of good and bad. But the negative comments, again, just like you, Sean, I just found them absolutely hilarious, just realizing that these people didn't actually listen to the podcast, or B, read the post, because I was pretty tongue-in-cheek near the end, but I guess that was lost on some people. But otherwise, I thought it was great. A lot of people said it was a lot of fun, that we did a really great job. Others, of course, disagreed and thought we were trying to draft a definitive list of the best ever, which clearly we weren't trying to do.
Hmm. How about you, Mike?
I didn't get a lot of feedback to me personally. The feedback that I saw was mostly online, which I thought was kind of funny as well. I did get a little bit of feedback from people that I had sent the blog around to, and kind of highlighting some of your same experiences. Some of the feedback I got was that they were impressed with my kind of unconventional choices. And I think that's maybe indicative of two things. One, maybe that not everybody listened to the whole thing or read or even quite understood that it was a snake draft. Because maybe choosing John Thompson as a four-person prime minister team is unconventional if you're just choosing your top four. But for a snake draft, maybe it's not as unconventional. But most of the feedback I got from people was that it sounded like a lot of fun and it looked pretty good.
Yeah. Pat?
Honestly, I didn't really tell anyone about thing, only except two people. So I didn't really get as much feedback as you guys did. I guess the only thing that was mentioned when I talked, especially with you guys and with a few other people that did not necessarily listen to the blog post or read it, was that it was a fun idea.
It's interesting that you say you didn't send it around to many people, because I remember the first day that I looked at the poll, and I sent it to my brother to see what he thought, and he responded, and he said, yeah, he voted for me, but he had looked at the poll results at that time, and he says, you certainly have an uphill battle, because at that point you had like 170 votes already, and I had like 9. And I totally had thought that you sent it around to pretty much everybody in your email contact at all. I'm like, you must have emailed everyone that you possibly knew, and it wasn't until later
exactly
that we...
That's exactly what I thought you would think, actually.
Yeah.
I know you...
No, I thought you were sitting, in your computer.
That's the thing. I assumed that... something like that. Maybe you guys think that I would do something like that, but I didn't. I literally told 2 people about it. I insisted that one of my friends vote for my team, and then I found out, I saw that the votes were just getting crazy. And yeah, I just realized, wow, what the hell happened? And I think it was that night that I emailed Sean saying I had nothing to do with this.
Right. At which point I did not believe you.
I'm sure you didn't.
No. So how did you?
You guys know me. I'm not like that.
Well, the way I found out was that
about the blog post.
Jim Clifford emailed me on. It went up Wednesday. Jim Clifford emailed me on Friday morning with it. I guess he and Ian had found out that this was going on, so they saw it and they sent it to me. And I think the comment from Jim was, you know, if you haven't read the comments, read the comments. And so I went through the comments and. You know, some of them were reasonable, some of them were funny, some of them were kind of outlandish, but again, that's sort of what you expect.
What's interesting is I tried my best when I was choosing my teams to treat people, the prime ministers, I mean, their legacies, really fairly and objectively and take the partisan aspect out of it for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want sort of my political stripes to sort of dictate who I would take or who I wouldn't take, but it just goes to show, I think, that in general... for the people out there in internet world or whatever, that, I mean, it's just a really partisan issue, and I don't think you can separate it, or it's difficult to separate the partisan aspect.
Yeah,
from what we were doing.
I totally agree, because I would never have chose Harvard if it was more, like, if partisan spirit was
part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going to get an email about that. it's true. But and I said to you guys, like, in retrospect, if we were to do this again, and obviously we're not going to do the same thing again because we've done it. But,
never again.
But I would change it, and I probably would have taken out Paul Martin and Stephen Harper as the two most recent. And that way we would have had 5 teams of 4, and the undrafted team would be 4. And then that way we can kind of stay out of more contemporary stuff. And at least with Jean Chrétien, we have almost 10 years separation now. And it's a little less fresh. And that's probably the biggest mistake. And also the question on the poll, I probably should have reworded it from whose team of prime ministers is best. I don't know how I would have reworded it. But to make it less, or to make it more in the spirit of that we were just trying to have fun with it, as opposed to actually make a definitive statement.
But the only thing I'd say to that is the question maybe could have been reworded differently, but it definitely goes back to the fact that people didn't actually really listen to it or read the blog post.
Well, those people did. We're talking about the people
who got picked up on that blog, and it seems that they didn't.
Yeah, because there definitely were a lot of people that listened to it and really thoroughly enjoyed it. So for those listening, again, thank you for listening, and thank you for your honest input.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, here's some honest input for you. I sent this to my curling team, and you guys have people who you sent it to who voted for you. I sent it to people who didn't vote for me. Which I think...
Great strategy.
Great strategy for me, but here you go. So I sent it to my curling team. One guy, my buddy Andrew Farrell, he doesn't like history. He's gotten mad at me a couple times when I've sent him other podcasts. So I sent it to him. His initial response to me was, quote, an hour and 22 minutes for 4 rounds? Put these clowns on a clock. which I particularly enjoyed. And then Whitney Quayle responded to that saying, these guys are ... verbose. ... which I enjoyed as well. And then Andrew actually did send a very long and well-reasoned response to the draft after he listened to it. My favorite part of it is that he ranked our teams from worst to least worst, with Aaron Boyes getting his vote as the least worst.
Interesting.
Which was pretty fun. And I liked, he actually did went through and really analyzed it and how what his criteria was. You know, he wanted, you know, regional diversity, diversity from the parties. And all these, for me, his response to me was that he liked my team, but I lost him on 2 things. That, quote, your last pick being a lame-ass senator, and the fact that I started to defend Kim Campbell yet criticize Paul Martin. which he referred to as, quote, baffling, my friend. So I thank Andrew for that feedback. I enjoyed that.
I think it's interesting that for anybody who delves into this kind of exercise or this topic, and when you really start to learn maybe about prime ministers you didn't know as much about before, I think everybody had one or two people or prime ministers that might have, they thought would have been lower on their list, but ended up being a little bit higher, and you might have been baffled yourself about the people you came out with on your team. And I think that's one of like the values of that, the exercise we did. I thought it was kind of fun to sit down and learn about this and see where, when I'm objective and I take the partisan aspect out of it,
what do these guys do?
What do they do, and where do I honestly rank them in terms of their quality?
And then Dean Moser, another member of my team, before he listened to it, he said he'd read the post and he had some opinions, but quote, "I want to listen to the esteemed panelists before making a final decision." And I don't know what makes this esteemed, but hey, I appreciate the compliment. And then Dean and I have talked about his response or how he felt about the draft as well. But then Derek Martins, fourth member of our team on Thursday nights, his response, I really enjoyed. One word, very simple. Meh. So, that's how he felt about it. So I thank the curling guys for their feedback on that. We enjoy that. And so some of the other places that we got picked up, Christopher Moore posted on his blog, he linked up to the Prime Minister's Fantasy Draft, with which I enjoyed. I thought this was great when I read this. He wrote that a bunch of guys, at Active History organized a fantasy draft to pick teams of prime ministers, which I really like. And then he has a photo of Mackenzie Bell with the tagline underneath being, "No one picked me."
I think, is it safe to say that Christopher Moore jumped on the bowel movement?
No, I think he's off of it because no one, yeah. We also have Fireside Publishing House. They linked up to us in their blog, which was fantasy, their title of it was Fantasy Prime Ministers League with a question mark. And they said that history geeks and even dabblers might want to check this post out. And then they sort of explain what we're trying to do with it and trying to boost people's or boost interest in Canada's history. And they encourage people to check out the blog and the podcast. So we thank them for that over at Fireside Publishing. And also Public History shared a link on their Facebook page that said, quote, "The NHL lockout silver lining. It provides quirky historians with the time and motivation to undertake the Canadian Prime Minister fantasy draft." So
that's the most accurate description I've heard yet.
Quirky historians, yeah.
With too much time with no hockey to watch.
That's true. And
right.
So I enjoyed that. So we thank everybody for linking to it, and all the tweets I got about it were terrific and great. And you know, for the most part, all the feedback we got was really good. So I'm glad that people enjoyed it on some level. And even the people who you know, maybe disagreed with our picks or maybe disagreed even with what we were doing generally, is, you know, at the end of the day, at least they're engaged in it. And they started a discussion. And while we may not agree necessarily with the form or what they're talking about, the goal was to get people talking about Canada's history and the history of the prime ministers. And I, you know what, if on some small level we were successful with that, then I would say this was a successful enterprise. And I'm happy that we did it. So,
truth.
Dynamite. That's a good way to end it. So thanks for getting back together, guys. I appreciate it. Pat, enjoy France.
I will.
And when you get back,
few days I have left.
Yeah, when you get back, we'll take you out.
Awesome.
Victory dinner.
Yeah.
Yay. Can't complain.
No, we're going to McDonald's. That's what you will get.
That's okay. I like McDonald's.
Not Dynamite.
No, I think a Happy Meal is the best thing, because then you can pick a toy as well.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I enjoy that. So thanks for getting back together, guys. Thanks for doing the podcast, the original podcast, this one. So our thanks to Aaron Boyes, Mike Thompson, Pat Fournier. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And if anybody has any questions, comments for the podcast in general, historyslam@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Sean Fever. And for anybody who's out tonight and you see Enrico Palazzo, please say hi for me.
Thanks for listening to the History Slam podcast. Check out activehistory.ca for more features and articles, and be sure to subscribe on iTunes.